The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yes, and Maureen mentioned, I've done all this retreat practice, and it's true. I've spent a lot of time sitting in silence on retreat. And I was just reflecting, like, my very first retreat. Like, how did this happen? How did I find myself here? And it was quite a few years ago now. I found myself with some time before I was going to start a new job. And I wanted to spend that time in a way that was meaningful. I just didn't want to pilfer it away, which is easy to do, right? I didn't just want to spend time puttering around or something. So I was thinking about this, and I happened to mention it to somebody that I didn't know that well. I think if I remember correctly, I knew this person from yoga class, you know, something like this. And I was relatively new at yoga at that time. And this person said, oh, you should go on a meditation retreat. You know, that's something that can be impactful. And I thought, meditation, that's got to be easy to sit around all day. I do shavasana at the end of yoga. That's, you know, the pose where you lie down and close your eyes. I thought, that's okay. How hard can this be? Wow, it was hard. I went on a 10-day retreat, a silent retreat, but it changed my life. It's just that first retreat had such an impact on me that now I've dedicated my life to this, and now here I am sitting up here. And sometimes I reflect that if I didn't have that conversation, if I didn't have that, you know, with this person, then it never would have occurred to me to go on a meditation retreat, and I would have a very different life. But because that first retreat, it was hard, like physically, right, to sit still for that long. I just wasn't used to that. And it was difficult to spend all that time looking at my mind. So my second meditation retreat, that I had started coming here, actually, and somebody, a very nice person, asked me, what is your name? And she and I ended up becoming really good friends. And it was just like having that friendship that, you know, I knew that this person was going to be here and that we would talk about things, and she seemed really nice. And she had a similar background as I did, formerly in corporate America and starting to do more and more meditation. And I think back also about how just this, this chance encounter, she asked me, what is your name? And then we had a conversation, really developing a relationship with her and then with other people. And now I can admit this, it was a little bit of peer pressure that made me to go on the second retreat. I kind of felt like, well, you know, okay, once was enough. I don't have to do that again. But and that just started me really on this whole path, just these conversations with other people. So maybe you might take a moment and just reflect, what role have other people had in, Evan, maybe even you're coming here tonight and you're starting a meditation practice, maybe picking up that first Dharma book or reading about meditation, or maybe it was, maybe you started with MBSR at a medical center, or maybe you know somebody who started with meditation. But sometimes, it's very easy to get this feeling or this idea that this practice is so much about just ourselves. It's a solitary practice, things that we do on our own, and we don't need anybody else, or it doesn't require anybody else, or something like this. And sure, it's easy to have that idea because at the beginning here, right, I came in and I sat down, I closed my eyes, I didn't talk to anybody. It's easy to have this idea that it's just all about that, about sitting quietly with our eyes closed. And to be sure, a big part of practice is about that, is about meditation. But we'd be really shortchanging ourselves if we thought that was all that it was about. Going on retreat also, it can sometimes, you know, it is isolating or retreating ourselves for a certain amount of time from others. I used to visit my parents on a regular basis, and then when I was going on retreat, I'd say, sometimes I would go on really long retreats and say, you know, I won't see you guys for a while, I'm going to be on retreat. And my poor father, he actually felt a little hurt, like, you know, why are you going? What are you doing? And I tried to explain, but, it, you know, he couldn't quite get it, which is perfectly fine. He didn't have to understand so much, but so I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about kind of connection with others and practice. Both how practice supports connection with others and how connection with others supports practice. Sometimes we don't talk about this. This often isn't a primary Dharma topic. Sometimes it is. I think maybe more and more these days we start to hear about this. Often, I think when this tradition first came to America, there was a real emphasis on just meditate, meditate, meditate. And this idea of community maybe wasn't as emphasized or highlighted. So for those of you who have participated in any programs, year-long programs we have here at IMC, it's a number of them, Eightfold Path program, right now we have Deepening Meditation program, or even Happy Hour, which I'm teaching on Wednesdays. It's not uncommon for us to have small group discussions. That is, you know, break up into small group and talk about things. I think it's often not the case that we don't quite know what we know until we try to articulate it, until we try to pull it together. And that can take the form of writing it down or sharing it with others. I know that I just recently had this experience where I heard this podcast. It was really interesting. And I said, I was telling one of my friends, oh, and it said this and this. And then my friend asks the question, well, what about that? I'm like, well, I don't know. And what about this? Oh, I don't know that either. And I realized I actually don't understand this as well as I thought I did until I tried to explain it. So talking about our understanding, talking about what we're learning about ourselves, about Buddhist practice, about the Dharma, can be a great way in which we integrate it, we can flesh out those areas in which we don't really have some clarity, maybe even discover those areas in which we don't have clarity. Maybe we don't even haven't appreciated, maybe I'll use that language, we haven't appreciated what has been meaningful and helpful, and maybe what hasn't been so meaningful and helpful until we try to pull it together and articulate it. So that's one way, of course, in relationships that we have is can be really supportive. And plus, it can be enormously beneficial to hear other people kind of echoing your own experience. Like, oh, I'm not the only one. I was having this kind of secret and I thought it was a kind of weird experience. My other friends aren't talking about this. And it can be really helpful, right, to just kind of normalize, to hear other people's have a similar understanding, similar experience. And in the same vein, it can be really helpful to hear other experiences that we didn't have. How else do we know what's inside other people's minds until we kind of share what's inside our mind And it's so easy if we haven't really had these types of conversations or talked to people to think that our interpretation, of course it's the right interpretation. We're having it, right? That means it's the right one. And then it's not until we share and talk we realize, oh, wow, there's something that maybe was looking at something from a really different angle. Turns out to be just as valid, but we wouldn't have showed up that way or wouldn't have come to, wouldn't come to our minds. Maybe things that I'm saying are obvious. Perhaps we have these experiences in other areas. But it's often the case that our inner life or our inner experiences with meditation, these are things that we often don't share or don't have opportunities to share. And if that's the case, that you might find yourself that you don't really have the opportunities right now to share with others, it might be helpful to write about things. It doesn't have to be long, complicated things, but just to spend some time putting some pen to paper to help kind of pull things together. And of course, often if you read Dharma books, and even if you, in the mindfulness, kind of in the secular scene and in kind of in the Buddhist scene, there's this emphasis or casual mentioning of the role of teachers. To have somebody who maybe is a little bit further along the path that can point out, oh yeah, maybe you can go a little bit this direction, or maybe go a little bit that direction, or maybe just to reflect back, like, yes, this is great, you're on the path, you don't need any directions. Just keep on doing what you're doing. Sometimes that can be really helpful and reassuring. I've had some teachers who just validating my experience was all that I needed. I didn't really... There have been times when I needed some direction too, but there's sometimes just having some recognition of somebody saying, yes, I've been there too. Don't worry, this difficulty will smooth itself out. Or don't worry, this really fantastic feeling, it'll smooth itself out too. Right, that's part of the teachings, right? These things kind of come and go, and we sometimes find ourselves tangled up with particular ones. And a teacher can help us point out where we're tangled and clinging on and struggling in ways that maybe we don't need to be. Maybe we don't need to be so... Maybe we can change our perspective on those, some of the things that we're looking at or experiencing. Maybe one last way I'll mention about how relationships with others or connections with others. And when I'm using this word relationship, I'm just keeping in mind there's a wide range. There may be people that we just casually know. Maybe we're not even sure who their names are, but we know that when we come to a meditation center or to a retreat center, it's a person who... I'm just making this up. Well, this is actually my own experience. Maybe you have one too. You know, that they sit in a way that has some settledness, and it's just a comfort to sit next to somebody like this. This brings to mind something for me. This was a long retreat. And for those of you who haven't been on retreat, how it happens, it's common that... before the retreat officially begins and people arrive and they're, you know, settling in, is you can choose your location in the hall. So most of us bring like our own cushions. And that's in the beginning, I had like a whole collection of cushions and blankets and stuff like that. Not as much now, but. And so I just chose a place in the hall that was like, you know, the right distance from the teachers, not too close, not too far, right? And not knowing who was going to sit near me, right? And then as it happened on this retreat, I like to sit on a cushion on the floor like this. The person to the left of me was sitting on a seiza bench, you know, so they sit up on their knees, so they're taller. And the other person next to me also was sitting up on a seiza bench. So these people are sitting up tall. I'm sitting on the floor. And it happened that one person was a woman, one person was a man. And they were so steady. And I just felt like, oh, mom and dad, I'm just sitting here. They were so still. And it just helped create the conditions, right, for, I don't know, this, the certain amount of like, oh, okay, here I am. This is what we're doing. These two people have no idea, right? They have no idea that they were kind of helping me and supporting me. They were just doing their own practice. They didn't even know each other, right? But it's the ways that maybe in obvious and not so obvious ways that we support one another, and in ways that we might support others without even knowing that we're doing that. When this person asked me, "What is your name?" All those years ago, she had no idea, right, that that was going to impact me and help me on my practice here. So I guess being on retreat with others is so much easier than being on retreat by oneself. To say, like, okay, I'm going to sit in silence for 7 days in my living room, right, is tough. It's much easier to do it when you're at a retreat center and you're part of a whole system and everybody is doing the same thing and there's a, and you're sharing responsibilities and there's just a general beautiful vibe that happens with them. But of course, there needs to be a middle way of connection. We can easily imagine, we can easily observe that certain parts of connecting our relationships with others is unskillful and is not supportive. If we are, like, just spend all our time just being social, talking in one way or another, and don't really spend any time just quieting down and spending time with ourselves. If we spend all our time being entangled with society and what's happening out there, who's saying what, who's doing what, if we have this idea that just if I have the right relationship, that somehow is, then I'll be happy. That'll be a source of everlasting happiness. I just get the right one. So, of course, in these ways, connection and relationship can be a way in which aren't supportive for our finding freedom, for our finding peace, and for our supporting our practice. And of course, to eschew all relationships and just say, okay, I'm going to close my eyes and meditate my way to happiness will only get you so far. Will only get you a certain distance. And then as our minds quiet, just happens that everything about our relationships, all the little sticky things, just start bubbling up. And sometimes it's the case that we need to take care of our connections with others, that we need to take care of our relationships in a way that allows for us to have, like, all aspects of ourselves to come together, for all aspects of ourselves to find some settling, to find some ease. If we're trying to kind of like disown that part that's in relationship or maybe longs for a relationship, it turns out that this practice is about wholeness. It's about bringing all the, maybe these fragments of ourselves or aspects, different elements of our lives, different aspects of our experience, bringing them all together, inviting them in. So in this way, so connection is and wholeness, I'll say, is an integral part of Buddhist practice. In some ways, we don't even know these parts that are maybe fragmented or disowned or kind of like cast aside or buried underneath. We often don't even know about them until we quiet the mind, until we kind of stop with the busyness that we find with our relationships with others, being entangled with society and the news. And I'm not saying to turn away from that, from either of these, but to find a middle way, a way that supports us, that supports others. It's not uncommon for people to come to this practice, to come to meditation, to come to any spiritual practice, because they're suffering, because there's difficulties in their lives. And it's not uncommon that those difficulties, those suffering, that uncomfortableness is related to our connections with others in some way or another, is related to our relationships. Disappointment, frustration, hurt, longing. In so many different forms, our families, our partners, our co-workers, our children. So many of these are part of what brings us to practice. And in many ways, we could say that even Buddhism as a whole kind of also grew out of community. At the time of the Buddha, of course, and how many thousands of years ago, people had to rely on each other in order to hear the teachings. Sometimes I think about this, right, that there's so many Dharma books and apps and podcasts, and we have audio Dharma. I looked on there, there's more than 10,000 talks. That's a lot of talks. But, you know, at the time of the Buddha, it was the only way was somebody telling it to you. You hearing it from, you know, one person to another. So having connections with people and which people you had connections with had made a big difference. It was paramount, right? Without that, the Buddha would have been some amazing guy that had some incredible experience sitting under a tree one time. And we would have never heard of him. But I think the Buddha also recognizing the role of connection and the role of community created the monastic orders for which people could practice together, could dedicate their lives to practice, and could preserve the teachings. That's why we have the teachings today, right? These monastic communities passed it on from one person to the next person to the next person to the next person for hundreds of years. How many generations is that? Until it was written down. But even when it was written down, it was still passed primarily through one person telling another. And part of those teachings that was preserved is a few things here. This is something from the early Buddhist teachings. And this is the Buddha speaking, saying, just as the dawn is the precursor for the rising of the sun, so too, having a good friend is the precursor for developing the Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path is one of the classic teachings on how to get awakened, how to find greater peace, how to find greater ease in your life. these eight different elements of practice, eight different aspects of one's life, including behaving, how we interact with others, of the importance of behaving ethically, including some mental development, cultivating and developing our minds and hearts, and including wisdom. What are some of the key insights, and what are some of the ways in which we can understand and practice with those understandings? Having a good friend is the precursor for developing the Noble Eightfold Path. For me, that turns out to be true. This person just asked me my name, and I started coming here, and I started learning about the Eightfold Path. The Buddha also says, in a similar vein, I do not see even a single thing that so causes wholesome qualities to arise in a person as good friendship. I don't see a single thing that so causes wholesome qualities to arise in a person as good friendship. So partly I think the Buddha is defining friendship as helping other people to arise good qualities. That's what it means to be a friend, is to help them be the best version of themselves. And hopefully they can help us be the best version of ourselves and help us find more freedom and more ease. But the practice that we do, whether it's the Eightfold Path practice or it's just mindfulness practice, whether it's meditation in general, whether it's loving kindness practice, these practices can support our relationships with others. Just as relationships with others can support our practice can definitely support our relationship with others. In fact, we could say that mindfulness, love, and the path of practice in general can be the channels through which we connect with others, through which we have meaningful relationships. It can be a way in which we show up for others, a way in which we show up for ourselves. So mindfulness helps us to see clearly. You might say that's its function. See all kinds of things clearly, including things we wish we didn't see. But mindfulness practice, of course, we practice, we come to a meditation center and we formally sit down and practice, but there's no reason that mindfulness has to just be here on the cushion. Of course, it bleeds out into our daily life. You might have already discovered this. If you start a regular meditation practice, mindfulness starts just popping up in different places in your life. Or it might be that you may have this as part of your practice. You have an intention to be mindful while doing different activities during the day. So mindfulness can shines the light of awareness, kind of like a flashlight. The more we practice it, the more we discover that it shines the light of awareness onto our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors. We start to understand ourselves better. We start to see things about ourselves that we hadn't seen before. Begin to understand some of our habits that maybe were just not obvious to us at all. When I first started practicing a habit that was painful for me to see about myself, but that I saw is that when someone close to me was going to be gone for some time, I would often get angry with this person. but you know, I made up a whole story. Like, you shouldn't have done this. But after, I just started to notice, oh yeah, I'm always angry before. And before, I thought it was like, oh, it's because their fault. They shouldn't have done this. But just started to see, like, oh no, actually, it's me. I have this sense of, you know, there's a whole range of things that happens, you know, a little bit of fear, maybe a little bit of sadness, maybe, oh, it's a whole, you know, this cocktail of experiences that was showing up as, you know, picking a fight. So with mindfulness, when this mindfulness started to bleed out into my daily life, and I started to see that, of course, it's an uncomfortable thing to see. I thought I had it all together, and start to see, like, oh, yeah, okay. This is, you know, I can own this. And it doesn't mean that I could stop it right away, I could stop this habit right away of picking a fight or becoming angry. But what other habits might we start to notice? Maybe we interrupt people when they're speaking. Maybe we like to dominate conversations. Maybe we don't speak up at all in conversations and really hold ourselves in check and don't share and show up for other people. And this way, mindfulness can help us learn about ourselves and see how our relationships, our connections with others are affected by habits that we might not even be aware that we have. We might not even be noticing. We might also see not only our behaviors, but more about our inner life, some of our motivations, some of what's fueling our behaviors or the fueling our interactions with others. Maybe we want people to admire us. So we're always trying to show off in some kind of way. Maybe we want people to like us. So we're trying to be, maybe we're turning ourselves into a pretzel to make sure that they like us, even though they might be saying something that is hurtful to us or harmful. Maybe we might discover that we often are gossiping about other people or otherwise using divisive speech, setting up the us versus them dynamic in our conversations. Or if we're not setting that up when other people are doing it, we just jump right in and like, yeah, and can you believe this other thing too this person did? And you know, us and them. And chances are that with mindfulness practice, we start to see things that, just like me wanting to pick a fight, that are uncomfortable to see. So rather than allowing this kind of like self-critical voice to rush in and to say, oh, you shouldn't do that, you're a bad person, you're supposed to be a meditator and look what you're doing, maybe we can briefly reflect on some of these behaviors we have, some of these motivations we have, some of these things that are fueling us, that are playing out in our lives. We can reflect what's underneath them. Maybe there's a wish for others to be happy, a wish for ourselves to be happy. This is a beautiful wish. Can we tap into that? Maybe there's a wish for the world to be a better place, for more people to feel safe, feel comfortable, have some ease in their life. That's a beautiful wish. Maybe there's a wish to find tranquility, or a wish to find some ease for ourselves, maybe some pleasure. There's nothing wrong with that either. So we don't have to condemn ourselves. Maybe we can tap into the wholesomeness, the supportive part of what's shows up when we are, the mindfulness leaks out into all these different areas of our lives. And one thing that this flashlight awareness also can help us to see, not only understand ourselves better, see ourselves better, but also to help us maybe feel into, recognize this difference between clinging and loving. This difference between really wanting to hold tight to a person, to a situation, and loving just a little bit more open-handed, just more with a feeling of support and care and warmth, as opposed to holding on so tightly. And there might be subtle ways in which we hold on that we don't recognize. But with mindfulness practice, we start to notice what is that feeling of clinging? What is that feeling of tightness? Or what is the feeling of when we're trying too hard, maybe? Maybe it's the absence of ease. This can help us to navigate our relationships. This can help us to find our ways with difficulties. So, of course, not only do we see ourselves more clearly with mindfulness practice, but we also see others more clearly. With this commitment to, with a mindfulness practice, including a commitment to be present for what's happening, we can be present for others. We can find ourselves just starting to show up for others. I think all of us have this experience of when we feel like we've been seen or we feel like we've been heard, it makes a difference. If you've ever had a conversation with somebody while they're like looking at their phone, you know, they're kind of with you, but they're kind of not with you also, then, you know, it feels very different when somebody's really present. Our relationships can flourish when we're present for other people. Whether it's the grocery clerk, or whether it's our partner, whether it's our coworker, doesn't mean that we have to condone exactly what they're saying or agree with them or agree with their behavior, but we can be present. So mindfulness also can help us to work through the emotions that are experienced when we're in relationship with others, when we have connections with others, including the love, the joy, the contentment, the happiness that happens in relationships with others. And to help us, again, with that feeling like, okay, not to hold on too tightly. These experiences really can flourish when there's some space with them. I think all of us know this. So mindfulness can help us to really appreciate when there's that feeling of connection. Appreciate when there's that feeling of happiness. I had a video conference call recently with some friends of mine. Were in different locations, and just an appreciation that, you know, just to have this small little connection. Just with a mindfulness practice to, you know, not to be so dismissive. Often we are kind of like, maybe these simple, small events that we have, connections or maybe as relationships that we have that aren't our primary relationships, it's easy sometimes to maybe not notice them or not to appreciate them. But if we're, the more we start to be present for our lives, the more we start to appreciate these different types of relationships. And of course, the more people start to feel appreciated. And then mindfulness helps us work with the difficulties that arise in relationships. Yeah, that's... I read this study recently that, you know, how neuroscientists, they often like to do imaging studies to see, like, what parts of the brain are associated with, you know, everything, right? So they're trying to figure out everything, mapping it. And to see that social pain, such as the loss of relationships, shows up in the same region of the brain as physical pain. If you ever had your heart broken, you don't need a neuroscientist to tell you this. It's painful. So a mindfulness practice is a way in which we can provide a tool in which we can work with some of these difficulties. It can help us to recognize, oh yeah, this is awful. This feels... this sadness, this hurt, this loneliness, whatever it might be. Mindfulness practice, we can help us to recognize this is what's happening. And often, sometimes recognizing is where it begins. And then as best we can we allow that experience to be there? Because after all, it is there, that is reality, that is the truth of the moment. Can we align ourselves with the truth of the moment? Can we align ourselves with reality? Not so that we can feel worse, not so that we can wallow in it or feel worse about ourselves or anything like this. But there's something that can happen when we kind of put down the wrestling with it or put down the struggle, even if it's just for a very short moment, and to just show up for ourselves, to show up for what's happening. And it might be helpful to feel it in our bodies. Feel the sensations, the physical sensation of the sadness, the physical sensation of the loneliness, whether it's a tightness in the throat, in the chest, there might be a tightness or churning in the belly, whatever it might be. These three things, recognize, allow, and feel, like feel in the body, go a long way, incredibly powerful, to help us metabolize, sort through, find our way to the other side of difficulties, including the difficulties in relationships. So in this way, that mindfulness can be a tool that can really help us with all of our emotions, including those ones that we experience with relationships. And then some of the insights that we have with Buddhist practice, in some ways, this things that we learn and practice other than mindfulness can really support our relationships and our connections with others. If you've been around the Buddhist scene, you'll probably have heard about the Four Noble Truths. And this first truth is, there is suffering. The Pali word is dukkha. We translate that as suffering, but it also could be a much milder form of the word, unsatisfactoriness, unease, stress, difficulty. But sometimes just recognizing or having it's like, oh yeah, okay. Suffering is part of life. We can't avoid it. And because there's difficulties, doesn't mean we're failing. It doesn't mean we're a bad person. It doesn't mean that everything is awful. It's part of the human experience. It's unavoidable. It's part of the package of being a human. And just like recognizing and allowing the difficult emotions, if we can somehow recognize that, okay, there's suffering, and to stop trying so hard to make it be otherwise. Instead, to recognize it with that little movement of recognition is a type of stepping back. That little movement of stepping back, saying, yes, there is suffering, allows that little space allows for something different to happen. Allows for a different, some shift, a shift either in our inner ecology or maybe in the outer world, if we're not so busy trying to push away or manipulate or change our experience. Also with this recognition that there is suffering, there is difficulty, maybe allows us in our relationships to not buy into this belief that we might have bought into about my relationships should make me feel 100% happy 100% of the time. Of course, it's silly to say these things, but there might be something in the back of our minds, this expectations that it should be smooth sailing or they should always be satisfying. But somehow just recognizing that, you know, the Pali word dukkha. Okay, there's dukkha. Dukkha is part of our life. It'll show up in our relationships as well. And if, another part of Buddhist practice, of course, it's not only mindfulness or not only the Four Noble Truths, but loving kindness practice. And this practice is where we intentionally cultivate a sense of goodwill, a sense of warmth, a sense of friendliness, the sense of loving kindness. This practice of oneness kind of like softens our hearts and softens our minds. And with this, with a softer heart and a softer mind, it's so much easier to see that how all of us, ourselves, others, in our own way, we're grappling with this human life, trying to make sense out of it, trying to find our way with it. And with that recognition that just like us, other people are trying to find their way, there can be a sense of this common humanity, a sense of, oh yeah, this is part of the human experience. And maybe this person that's irritating me over there, this person that's doing this over here, and that person over there, you know, whatever it might be. Can start to see, oh yeah, just like us, they, just like me, they're trying to find their way. And with that little shift, we can turn them back into a human instead of that terrible entity who's doing that terrible thing. And when they become a human, then that kind of helps us be human too, and we can bring all aspects of ourselves. And we can show up for them either if we have a relationship with them, or maybe it's somebody we don't have a personal relationship whatsoever. But we can bring the richness of our experience, the richness of our wisdom to our thoughts about them, to our relationship that we might have in our head with them. Maybe one more thing I'll say about loving kindness practice intentionally cultivating, just like how cultivating mindfulness allows so many things to be possible, seeing things clearly, cultivating loving kindness in a really meaningful, profound, powerful way starts to change our default story, the story we have about ourselves, the story we have about others. Set this instead of kind of a us versus them, me versus you, this really looking through the lens of everything of like what's the best way for me to end my suffering, what's the best way for me to do whatever I need to do. That concern starts to soften and dissolve, and when that starts to dissolve, so many beautiful things become possible. We just start naturally behaving more kindly and responsibly. Kindly and responsibly towards ourselves. Start taking care of ourselves in ways that perhaps we haven't been. Taking care of ourselves includes setting boundaries. Taking care of our bodies, taking care of our minds, taking care of our relationships. We start to behave more kindly and responsibly towards others. As our sense of self starts to become less calcified and this concern of ourselves starts to become less rigid, it's just natural. We'll start to have this warmth and care for others. So in that way, our practice can help support our connection, our relationships with others. So if we were just find ourselves to practice by just reading Dharma books and sometimes meditating, we might not notice how this connection supports practice and practice supports connection. It's an integral part of our life, integral part of connection. And maybe I'll stop there. I see it's 9:00. I spoke a little bit longer than I expected. My apologies. But may you all, this evening, notice those things that, those relationships you have that bring some little bit of connection and appreciate them, and if need be, cultivate and develop. And maybe may your practice help you with if there's some difficulties in your relationships. So, thank you.